April is here, and if your windows won't open for fresh air or seal tight to keep out pollen and bugs, then talk to Window Nation. Right now, for every two windows you buy, you'll get two free. There's no limit to how much you can save. Plus, save even more with no interest or payments for 24 months. With proven quality, you'll get affordable windows that meet or beat the national brands. Don't miss out. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com to schedule your free in-home estimate.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
This episode of BGN Radio is brought to you by Clip It, the hottest app that is out there. Watch TV, make clips, and share. For more information, check them out at clipit.tv or check them on Twitter at clipit.tv.
Michael Kiss.
Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat.
And Benjamin Solak.
How old are you?
It's the Kissed and Solak Show.
Did we just become best friends?
Yep. Right here on BGN Radio.
You are flying high on the Kissed and Solak Show, your home for the best Eagles analysis in the game. This is episode 8, and it is brought to you by the fine folks at BGN Radio. I am your host, Michael Kissed. Follow my X&O work for InsideThePylon.com and on Twitter at MichaelKissedNFL. As always, I'm joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He once rode in my trunk for 30 minutes through the mean streets of Mobile, Alabama to get to the Exos film room because that's the kind of grind he's about. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation. And NDTScouting.com is where you can follow his excellent draft work. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben. Combine, brother. Good times. How you doing, brother?
Yeah, fantastic time at the Combine. I will say thank you to listeners. Welcome back. We were anticipating dropping a show on Saturday, kind of a halfway point between the Combine. Then we were thinking, why not watch the entire Combine, hang out with BGN Radio, talk a little John Barshard, put an episode on the main channel. And then the Eagles started doing some crazy stuff, which make sure you're heading over to BGN Radio, the main show. You're going to be talking a little bit of Carson Walsh, this Edmonton Eskimos offensive coordinator who Philadelphia's bring onto their offensive staff. Talking a little bit of Vinnie Curry, obviously we have three very conflicting reports, all from the exact same person at Ian Rappaport about what could happen with Vinnie Curry. And so there's a lot going on Philadelphia post-combine. Obviously this is where news starts to break and so on and so forth. So no more the combined show. It's just the Kiss and Solak Show focusing on the offseason, focusing on the combine talks. So that's why we didn't have the show on Saturday. But hey, Mike, we've got 3 days of combine to break down. No defensive backs just yet. We'll obviously be commenting on that in a later episode as those perform on Monday and we're performing on Sunday. But either way, fun combine, dude. We were talking pre-show. Yeah. Better combine. Much better than 2016, which was quite boring.
Yeah, it was. And there were some interesting storylines, too. And we're going to kind of touch on some of the main storylines. And then throughout the show, we'll narrow it down to a more Eagle-centric focus. So we'll be talking winners and losers and stuff like that. But first, Ben, I mean, it's a big story. Lamar Jackson at the podium, getting several questions about him being a wide receiver. This is how that went down.
No teams has asked me to play wide receiver. I don't even know where it come from. You know, I'm strictly quarterback. Yes, sir. Whoever liked me at quarterback, that's where I'm going. You know, that's strictly my position. Not at all. I'm not going to be a wide receiver at all tomorrow. Quarterback position. No, sir. I'm a quarterback. Well, you know, I can't speak for the media. You know, you guys do their job. You know, I just do mine. You know, I stay away from it, answer their questions. I'm a quarterback. I don't know anything about the racial slurs. No, not at all. Strictly quarterback. I'm shocked now. Yeah, that's crazy. You know, I thought I did a good job at quarterback. I thought I did. You know, but hey, they say what they want to say. You know, they're going to build a story. I'm here now. I'm at the combine. I'm happy to be here. I just got to show off my ability. Yes, sir.
So, Ben, Lamar is obviously a quarterback, right? I mean, he said it over and over. The rumors of him working out as a wide receiver or teams asking him to work out as a wide receiver, Lamar says that's not true. And even if you were going to draft Lamar as a wide receiver, you wouldn't draft him at a spot where a team would take him before you, drafting him as a quarterback.
Right.
Can you kind of expand upon, and I know you did a big piece on him for NDTScouting.com recently, breaking down some of his mechanics and all that stuff. I think Lamar Jackson's a quarterback that you can take in round one. He's in my top four quarterbacks. What about you?
Right. So let's talk a little bit first about the situation behind whether or not Lamar was asked to be a wide receiver. So before the combine, a couple of days beforehand, I believe, representatives from all 32 teams sit down with the guys who run the combine, and NFL executives, owners are there, and they are able to submit a request to have a player who is listed at a certain position by the combine officials work out elsewhere. It only takes one team to submit a request. You do not have to have multiple, you know, like I second the motion, I third the motion, none of that. One team can submit a request and then it's submitted. And then the combine can choose to completely ignore it. They can go to that player and to his agents, to his camp, and ask him whether or not he'd be willing to do it. And the player can deny or accept, right? So there's multiple steps at which that request could just die out. And there's nothing NFL teams can do if the combine says no or if the player says no. They can try to bring that player into they can go to their pro day. They can bring him in for a private workout and try to work them out at a different position if they're that desperate to see it. But if, you know, the player says no, the player says no. And so Lamar was not asked by any teams to work out as a wide receiver. Let's take a case like, you know, Obanaya Okoronkwo, this edge defender out of Oklahoma. This is a guy who has a linebacker sort of a build. He dropped in space very often as a linebacker for Oklahoma, but most understand him to be an edge, right? Now, he was listed, I believe, among the linebackers, right? Now, that being said, it would be completely reasonable for a team to request either to Okoronkwo's camp directly or to the combine, hey, work out at edge for us because we're a 3-4 team and we think that you could rush off the edge. And it would make sense for Obo to do that, right? As you said, for a team to come up to Lamar and say, hey, can you work out a wide receiver for us? Firstly, is telling his camp directly, I don't think you're a quarterback, which you don't, like, that's impolite. So you're not going to go up to him and do that. So instead, you're going to go to the combine staff. Now, even if the combine staff thinks that that makes sense, which, I mean, sure, they can if they want to. Like, you know, combine, they're allowed to think what they want. When they come to Lamar's camp, Lamar's going to say no, number one. And number two, still no teams, technically, which is what the point was. No teams have asked Lamar to work at a wide receiver. So I guarantee you there are still people in the NFL who think he's going to be a wide receiver eventually. There are people in the NFL who wanted to see him work out at wide receiver because they don't think he's a quarterback. But the fact of the matter remains that I would venture the majority, and even say the strong majority of teams in the NFL, view him as a quarterback. Now, when it came to the testing, you know, Lamar chose not to do any athletic testing to kind of put this narrative to bed. He didn't want to come out and, you know, run really well and move really great. And all of a sudden, the teams are saying, wow, that athleticism would look great as my flanker. You know, he wanted to avoid that. So all he did were the on-field drills throwing the football. When it came to those drills, up and down, the way he's been for his entire career at Louisville, nothing to surprise you, but nothing to make you believe he's any less qualified to be a quarterback than anybody else who threw with him. And that's the long and the short of it. I'm quite finished talking about Lamar as a wide receiver. He's a quarterback. He's a good one. He's got his warts just like every other quarterback. End of story.
Yeah, I mean, Danny Etling and Luke Falk were working out. Tanner Lee were working out at quarterback. If those are the guys that you're thinking about drafting and you want to move Lamar Jackson, go ahead and do that. I mean, Ian Rappaport, the same guy who's bungling this story about Vinny Curry right now on the timeline, said that, you know, Ronald Jones and Sony Michel were asked to do wide receiver drills. Defensive ends Bradley Chubb and Marcus Davenport were asked to do linebacker drills. But yeah, edges drop into coverage. Teams want to see that. Running backs line up at wide receiver. Teams want to see that. This is for a completely different reason. Anyway, Lamar Jackson is not a wide receiver. He's going to be drafted as a quarterback. He's likely going to be drafted in the first round. I'm glad. I was happy with the way he dealt with it. He seemed really engaging when people asked him actual questions, as such as, what system do you run? Which is Earhart Perkins in Louisiana, the same system that the Patriots run. So it very interesting to hear him speak on it. Anyway, moving on, maybe some general quarterback talk. Josh Rosen had himself a pretty darn good day. He can come out there and just fling the thing. Josh Allen seemed a little bit uncomfortable in his early throws, and then he was unleashing some 70-yard bombs that were nice. I mean, the arm strength is there. Everyone knows that. He can shift tectonic plates with his arm strength. It's just the consistency. It's the ability to put touch on the ball. Sam Darnold chose not to throw. He's going to throw at his pro day. He says he's not changing his mechanics. He's got that long, sweeping, throwing motion. Ball gets out fairly quick. So, Ben, just general thoughts on the quarterbacks, how you thought they performed.
Yeah, so I thought you heard a lot about, you know, Josh Allen came away as a winner. And Josh Allen was listed as one of my winners for the day. That was because Allen can go games looking like two different people, like Jekyll and Hyde, right? And in my primer for the position and for the day, I said, you know, what you want to do as a quarterback in these throwing drills is not stick out. You don't want anybody to notice that you're throwing, right? Which sounds kind of stupid. But of all of the things that happen at the combine where tape is significantly more important, throwing the football is paramount. It is number one, okay? You could throw the football 100 times at the combine. I really just don't care how well you can throw a route you may have never practiced before, on a drop you may have never practiced before, to a wide receiver with whom you have never practiced, not wearing pads against no defense. Literally, it's a complete aberration when compared to what they actually do on the field. And so you want to not stand out. You want to go out there, be accurate, miss some of them, whatever. Just don't be bad enough that people notice, okay? Yeah. Don't have a slow enough release that people notice. Don't have slow enough velocities that people notice, right? You just want to fade into the masses and rely on your tape. And that's why you see very often for a lot of these throwers, they're criticized on the broadcast for guiding the football in. You know, people, they cheat on their drops. You know, they short arm things, they quicken up their process simply so that they don't do anything that looks really bad. And you can't blame them for that. Throwing at the combine should never raise anybody's stock ever. Okay. And so Rosen missed more than you'd expect given his tape, but I get why and I don't care. Baker Mayfield looked fine given his tape. I really don't care. Yeah. Allen looked better than what he typically does on tape. I really don't care. The one thing I will say about Allen, and this is key understanding Josh Allen, this kid out of Wyoming, with whom there's a big discrepancy regarding how the NFL views him and NFL decision makers view him and how people in the media view him. A lot of us in the media don't think he's a top five quarterback. I'm one of those people. A lot of people in the NFL think he's a top one overall pick. So here you go. Watching Allen work out like that helps you understand why NFL teams like him so much. Because this kid out of Wyoming, nobody started to know about him because he was putting up such great numbers against Fresno, because nobody's watching that game, right? It's not like a Baker Mayfield or a Josh Rosen or a Sam Darnold who's playing for Power 5 schools, who's in primetime television. It's not what it was, right? This is some kid in Wyoming, in Laramie. And so how did NFL teams fall in love with him? Well, they heard that he was doing good things in practice and he had a big arm, so they went down and they watched him practice. Maybe they even watched him play in a game, right? But they were able to work with him one-on-one in his junior year in 2016, 2017. And in practice, Allen is mouthwatering because he's gigantic. He's good mechanically, right? He is in practice. Yeah. He's got fine mechanics. And he can sling it in an irregular fashion. Like
he could throw it a
jaw-dropping. It's ridiculous. And so you watch that in practice. That's very exciting. And he's very accurate when there's no defense around. You put on the game tape and he's booty cheeks. Like there's no other way to say it. He's certified booty. But you see how exciting he is in practice. So there's that big discrepancy in the Allen evaluations. My encouragement to you is use this combine performance he put out there, which was a good performance, to understand why NFL teams like him. Because they're the ones who get to see him in that context, and we rarely do. This is the only time we get to see him in a one-on-one, just working routes, no pads, no defense context. And he looked great. So there you go.
We're going to go from quarterbacks to running backs. Some performances that stood out for me. I mean, we would be remiss if we did not talk about Penn State running back Saquon Barkley. He ran a 4.40 at 233 pounds. He jumped out the gym at 41 inches. That is
Mike, the
absurd.
Over-under was 4.4, and I was battling with people for a week. I said I would take the under. I would take the under on 4.4. And he ran a 4.4 official, and his second one, which was a 4.42, he stumbled out the blocks and still ran a 4.42.
He wrote a run under.
He could have broken it. He could have broken it. And the thing is, what's gonna happen is at the Penn State Pro Day, he's gonna break it. Because if memory serves, he did not do like short shuttle and well, you know, what have you. Right. So he didn't do broad, three cone or long shuttle. Okay.
Right.
And so I wouldn't be surprised if he lightens up a little bit for his pro day and then he runs underneath 4.4 and everybody says, oh, it's because it's pro day. Now he could have ran sub 4.4 at the combine, but whatever.
Yeah. Plus he benched 29 times, which is twice as much as Oklahoma tackle Orlando Brown.
Oh,
only
poor
put up
Orlando
14.
Brown.
Oh my God, dude. If I'm Orlando Brown's agent, I am on a megaphone screaming about how he has the flu. Inject him with Ebola. I don't care. However, you have to prove that this man was sick. How do you show up like that? How do you show up? That agent should be fired. Like, do your pro day. Work it out. If you know you're going to run as fast as Rich Eisen, don't run. You don't have to.
So I'll say this. Bad combine right now. 2 months till the draft. Let's say he wasn't going to get much better for his pro day. Only 1 month until the draft.
So be farther from it.
Make it happen. And then other stuff will undoubtedly happen between now and April, and people will forget more and more about it, at least media-wise. If you're going to put up bad numbers, they're going to be bad numbers for teams, period. But like, we're going to get bored of covering Orlando Brown's terrible numbers in the next 2 or 3 days.
We'll talk about more running backs. We'll keep it within the Barkley thread here. Nick Chubb, a big day for him. Runs 4.52, jumps 38.5, broad jump 10.8. Short shuttle 4.25. Very, very good numbers. He had a great day. Darius Guy is showing up at 224, which is heavier than he was listed, and running 4.49 was also very impressive. Nyheim Hines is a guy that we had running very fast, and he ran 4.38, so he did well for himself there. Two guys that did not run that surprised me. Well, it didn't really surprise me with Kerryon Johnson, because I don't think he's very fast. However, he did jump 40 inches on his vert. So we'll see what that comes out to. He came in kind of light too. He came at 213. I thought he came in at 213 to run fast and that he didn't run. And then John Kelly from Tennessee, the guy who runs through people's faces, did not run either. And I think he might be buying more time to train up his 40. Any of these other running backs stick out for you? Or any thoughts on the guys that I mentioned?
I'm going to lob you a couple questions. Scale of 1 to 10. 1 is the least bothered. 10 is the most bothered. You are how bothered by a 7.18 three cone for Nyheim Hines?
I'm not bothered at all because it's straight line and he's pretty decent at absorbing contact. Like, he never looked like the shakiest guy, like the shiftiest guy on tape, but straight line, he's got the burst. And I think he understands the contact angles. I'm more concerned with his vision, so I'm more concerned with his film. That's what I'm more concerned with.
I hear you. I think if you're going to come under 200, I'd like for you to be better than 7.18.
Yeah, like, I
before his combine, I would have said, yeah, he's not the shiftiest guy. But again, if you're going to be sub 200, you better be coming in 7.0s and preferably under 7.05 to me.
Yeah.
So like, that stood out to me a little bit as far as Nyheim Hines goes on his evaluation.
I'll go with a 4 out of 10 on that
one. Yeah. Like, I'm fine with that. Sonny Michel, 2.14, runs a 4.54 official 40.
His play speed is much faster than that. And that's not a terrible time. And we don't have the 10-yard splits on these running backs yet, so I think I'm more interested in the 10-yard split. Basically, the reason the 10-yard split is more important for me than the 40, long speed is nice. Do they have that initial burst to run through smoke and run through the hole and beat guys that way? Like, I don't care if you get chased down by a quarterback that runs 4.3, that's whatever, you already picked up 40, 50 yards. But be able to get through the hole at the very least and then let your other traits take over.
It's true. That's the thing, is that What Michelle did is, I mean, so he came out, posted 22 on the bench, which is fun, but bench does not matter for running backs.
Right,
then the 4.54 40, and then he did nothing else. If your only test is going to be the 40, run faster than a 4.54.
Yeah,
please.
I get that.
But, like, you know, whatever, it's fine. Obviously, a big disappointment is Ronald Jones, who came up lame during one of his 40-yard dashes. So he didn't get much testing in there. The only testing we have for him is a 36.5 vertical, which is a five. That's a solid number.
That's fine.
And he came in at 205, which is very important to him. And I like that a lot. Ronald Jones, if there's a name to watch for running back at 32 for Philadelphia, it's going to be Ronald Jones out of USC. He checked boxes for me coming in at 205. That 36.5 vert is great. Let's see what he's able to do. 40-yard dash, he should be running sub 4.5, right? And so I think that's what we're going to be able to get from him. Two guys who impressed me quietly, a shout out to Bo Scarborough out of Alabama, huge guy who ran very well. Shout out to Kalen Ballage, who also tested very well. But the two names I want to highlight, number one is my dude Ryan Nall out of Oregon State.
Yeah, I knew you would.
And I'm just going to keep pounding the table for Ryan Nall until something happens. I'm reaching the point where I might write a post about him just to make more people talk about him because I'm very upset. Ryan Nall, 6'2", 232, ran a 4.58 official 40, which is fast for 232. And it's fat, like 6'2", 232, right? So he's got like longer strides, right? And then we're talking a 33-inch vert, we're talking a 210 broad, and we're talking a 6'9.5 3 cone.
That 3 cone surprised me.
That was the big one. And there are plays where Null breaks into the second level and then he makes somebody miss in space. And you watch it and you go, oh, that secondary player was like coming downhill really hard because he thought Ryan Hill was just like, you know, a one-speed
guy. You make
guy.
All the excuses,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Ryan Null just like was able to wiggle and make it miss, right? You don't look at it and you go like, that guy can change direction. Put up a 6'9.5 and all of a sudden, wait, can you change direction? Is this a thing you can do? Ryan Null is a very exciting prospect because you can put him, again, 6'2", 232. You can put him at H-back. You can put him at like tight endy fullback sort of position. You can put him at halfback. He's a great third down sort of guy, great goal line sort of a guy, great short yardage sort of a guy, great guy to have on play action. I liken him to Kyle Juszczyk, right, who's the highest played fullback in the NFL, used by San Francisco in a plethora of ways, lined up in the slot sometimes, for goodness sakes. He'd be very fun in Philadelphia's offense. So Ryan Null is the guy that I wanted to highlight for that reason. And then my other guy, who I liked him on tape, good vision, good decision maker, didn't think he was going to come out and test the way that he did, Justin Jackson out of Northwestern can play, Mike.
Yeah,
Justin Jackson came out 4.52 on the 40 officially, but then a 38.5 vert, a 10.2 broad, and then the 6.81 on the 3 cone, 4.07 in the short shuttle. That is exceptional as far as explosiveness and change of direction goes for his physical profile. 193 is the weight, and so he is a scat back sort of a dude, but he's an excellent decision maker. He reads defenses very, very well, knows how to set up guys at the second level. I think he's a great 1B in the NFL. So to me, that's a fourth, fifth round pick, which it's crazy. You can get a guy like that in the fourth, fifth round. But if you're a team that has a solid bell cow back and you need a change of pace guy, Justin Jackson out of Northwestern is a great late round guy.
And I haven't watched Justin Jackson since the summer, but he really impressed me with being lighter, but at the same time, the way that he absorbed contact and dealt with contact, I thought was really good for him. That 4.52 to me, because he didn't, to me on tape, didn't have the greatest long speed, that would indicate when the 10-yard split comes out that that's a very good number for him. So it was a big day for him.
He, three straight seasons, 1,000 yards rushing
right.
for Justin
Jackson. He's productive. Yeah.
I mean, that's every box. That's every box.
Yeah, okay, so wide receiver, I'll put two guys out there that, well, one didn't surprise me, the other one did, and I went racing back to the tape, and we'll see if you had anybody that had you racing back to the tape.
I know who it is.
Who is it?
Cortland Sutton.
Cortland Sutton, man.
That's
up my board.
Oh, yeah, that's a top five wide receiver in this class for sure.
Yeah, oh, you're a big Sutton guy.
Been a big Sutton guy. Never, I like good athletic testing, but I wasn't blathered by any of these the way that some people were. I wasn't shocked.
The three cone surprised me. When I watched him from 16 to 17.
The three cone was good.
Yeah, and I saw the movement skills, because the three cone that he put up at 6'3 plus at 218, a 6'5", 7 three cone? Like, you could have said 6'8". I'm like, oh, okay, that's about the wiggle that I saw on tape. And then I saw 6'5", 7". I'm like, I have to seek out routes where he's flipping his hips like that and doing things of that nature. And that brought me back to the tape. And he was already flying up my board from what I saw. And I watched him again last night. And man, let me tell you, the guy from 16 to 17 made some big leaps. It's hard to quantify, especially when you use numerical scoring, how you grade that upside. But as far as if people are looking for an alpha dog, they are no longer looking for Auden Tate, who ran a 4.69.
Oh, Auden.
They are looking at Cortland Sutton. So his stock went way up. DJ Moore gained an inch or two. And you had some questions about if he was the athletic guy that people thought he was. And he came out.
He is.
And not only did he measure in 6 foot, he ran a 4.42. He jumped 39.5 inches, 11 foot broad. I mean, checked every box as far as the athletic testing. What'd you think about DJ Moore's day?
Yeah, no, DJ Moore was wide receiver 6 coming out of the combine, and Auden Tate was like wide receiver 4. That is not going to hold true. Okay, Auden Tate was never fast, okay?
Right.
But all you have to do when you're not fast is come in and just don't suck. Don't run a 4.7, Auden. Like, dude. Come in a little bit light. Like come in light. Talk about the fact that you were injured all year. Teams will totally excuse you and run a 4.64, man.
Oh, and jump on. Better than 31 inches on the vert.
Yeah, that
like,
was
that's going to be your game?
Bad day for Auden Tate. It was upsetting. But yeah, DJ Moore. You wonder, Mike, if he's still growing. Because he's young, right? He's 21.
Yeah.
You wonder if he grew. Because that's very, like, biologically, that's very reasonable. And if that's
it's weird that the team site would have him as 5'11", and NFL Draft Scout would have him as 5'10". and have both be under. You know what I mean?
But the fact of the matter is he's 6 foot as far as how he's right. measured at the combine. And so like that's what I'm paying attention to, you know?
And I thought he could play outside and inside, and now it just confirmed to me that he can play outside.
Yeah, and the best way to answer that question would be if you had the opportunity to sit down with somebody in the Maryland coaching staff and say, okay, so what, has he been growing? Like, what's the deal? Because they'll know that, because, you know, they regularly stick up with it. But yeah, DJ Moore is a guy who put himself in the top five for sure. You know, as far as my top five wide receivers go, my top three are still unchanged. That's Ridley, Washington, and Pettis in order. Dante Pettis, obviously a guy who didn't jump, is dealing with an ankle injury or whatever, so right. he is no athletic testing. But Washington and Ridley both did what I needed them to do. Ridley is not a guy who was very impressive as far as the jumps go, his explosiveness numbers. I didn't really expect him to be. Came in at sub 190, and so you're a little bit worried there. But once you go under 4.44, he ran a 4.43 official, I'm feeling very good about that, right? And so Ridley's a guy... didn't think he was going to blow away athletic testing. He didn't. It's not going to change how I feel about him on tape. James Washington was a guy who all I needed to make sure was that he had at least 4.5 speed. James Washington came out and he ran himself, I believe, a 4.53? 4.54 was his official time. Perfectly fine with that. Those are my top two guys, Pettis. And then I have Tate, Sutton, Moore, Equanimeous, St. Brown. We're all kind of in a lump. And everybody did well for themselves there, except for Tate, who's going to drop a little bit. The one guy I will circle who has me very excited. And before I do, quick shout out to Marquez Valdez-Scantling, a guy who came in 6 foot four, ran a 4.37. 10-inch hands. Like, if you're not known, come into the combine 6'4 and run a 4.37. Great plan. Genius idea. Agent deserves
Scantling
so much money.
Was scalding. Right?
Yeah, Marquez Valdez-Scantling. So he's a guy who, you know, he just vaunted himself up to the top of guys taping you to watch immediately.
You'll get
right?
drafted off that alone, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's a big plus for him. Traquan Smith out of Central Florida, who's one of my dudes, came out and had himself a fantastic day. Sub 4.5 time was huge for him. I had 4.55 written down in my notes. That was big. And then you come out and you jump 37.5 in the vertical, 10.10 in the broad, Mike. 10.10 in the broad. A kid can jump. And so that's really nice for his evaluation. But I'm going to circle, and I owe an apology to Alan Lazard, Iowa State. Lazard was a guy coming into the season. I liked his tape, and I was excited about him. And then he did nothing to turn me off, but you watch him, and he has never once separated from anybody in his life, right? Like, he's never broken up with his girlfriend, Mike. That's how poor he is at separating. He's never been able to do this. And so we're watching him down at the Senior Bowl with a lot of other big-bodied guys, and he just looks a click slower than everybody. Yep. And so I was talking about, and NFL teams also asked Lazard before he tested, about him moving to tight end. And very much in his Lazard sort of way, because by all accounts, he's an amazing kid. He was like, yeah, I'll move to tight end. Just get me on the field. You know what I mean? No worries. Mm-hmm. But then Lazard came out, Mike, and he ran 4.55 at 227 pounds at 6'5". He's like huge and he can move. That, like I said, I needed Traquan Smith to hit 4.5, right? To kind of project as like a jump ball, deep threat sort of a guy. Mm-hmm. Well, Traquan Smith came in at 6'2", 210. So Lazard's got almost 20 pounds and 3 inches on him and came in and ran 4.55, right? So that's exactly what you needed. Then you throw in 38 inch vertical and then he didn't run the three cone, which I'm not surprised about that, right? Yeah. I think that his three cone would be garbage, but really, really impressive work for Lazard in the drills that he did. And so I think you still project him as a guy that you put at tight end. I still think you do, but make him a move tight end. Put him in the slot, make him a big slot. He runs good routes. Like, he's a detailed sort of a guy. And if he's not going to separate from corners, then put him up against linebackers and safeties. Make it a little bit easier on him.
Use him like Trey Burton, basically. Yeah, I agree.
I love that. And to me, that's an interesting thing to talk about for Philadelphia. It really is. Mm. So Alan Lazard, big ups to Lazard. I picked on you a lot. Thought you were a really bad athlete. Well done, Tiger.
Speaking of people that I have picked on, Mike Gesicki. The tight end from Penn State.
I done tried to tell you, Michael.
Well, I knew he was going to jump, and he did.
And to be honest, growing up, I thought I was going to be the next Vince Carter in basketball. So that was my thing. Like, I'm just going to dunk on people. I'm going to keep playing basketball. And I was thinking about playing AAU and just kind of focusing on basketball. And then my coach told me, hey, man, let's try a wide receiver. We're going to 7-on-7. So I was like, all right, yeah, I mean, we'll give it a shot. And went out there, and turns out I like catching touchdowns. So it's fun.
And he hasn't landed yet. He jumped 41 and a half on the 40. He ran 4.54 at 247 pounds. And broad jump, 10.9. Short shuttle, 4.10. The three cone, 6.76. I would have slapped you in the face if you told me he was going to run sub 6.8 in the three cone. I have definitely said that he had a dad bod and a dad run to him before. I don't know where this came from. That was not on the film that I saw. I knew what he was, a red zone target, a jump ball guy with hops and all that stuff. And then we go to the Senior Bowl in Mobile, and you see him making these sharp angle cuts, and he looks clean. And like throughout every step of this process, he has proven my initial thought of him from the film wrong. I don't know. Like, you, that's the type of guy you have to run back to the film and look at again, because obviously you're probably missing something.
Some of
right?
us don't have to run back and look at the film. Some of us were already very high on the athleticism from the film, Michael.
Hey, so you're going to be condescending when DJ Moore, I mean, we both got one L. Over here.
No, that's
right.
True. Okay. DJ Moore, I said that I wasn't positive he was as athletic as people were saying. Okay. And then he came out. You're the one who said Mike Gesicki always got a dad bod. Never was
I said
that,
that last
heinous.
Summer. Come on. Right. Then I saw him in Mobile and he looked like a chiseled statue.
Gesicki is very much in play for 32, Mike. I think if Philadelphia feels good about Mac Hollins as their third wide receiver. I think if they want to see what they got from Shelton Gibson, if they feel good about the young wide receivers they have in there, but they still kind of want to add a pass catcher, obviously very weak in the tight end position, you could see them go ahead and make a strength, right? You have space. Like, you have room in your tight end room because Burton and Celek are likely both gone. And you obviously have Zach Ertz, who's fantastic. Gesicki will be in the conversation at 32 because you could go ahead and become just nightmares for defensive coordinators with Gesicki and Ertz on the field. I still think you're more likely, were they to go tight end, I think they're much more enamored with a guy like Goddard who can block, because Zach Ertz doesn't give you much as a blocker and Gesicki gives you even less as a blocker. But after the way Gesicki performed, yeah, he's a round one conversation sort of a guy, and Philadelphia is going to have room at the tight end position. So that is good to note. Gesicki stole the show. To me, he was the ultimate winner of day two among the quarterbacks, wide receivers, and tight ends. The one guy who I will highlight because he came out and answered questions for me, because I did have athletic questions off of tape, that was Tyler Conklin out of Central Michigan. He did very, very well. 4.8 flat on the 40, 38 vertical, 10 foot on the broad exactly. And then a 4.23 shuttle was surprising for me. 4.23 short shuttle. That's good. Little, like, you know, acceleration, deceleration there for a Tyler Conklin guy who he projects very nicely as a Trey Burton, sort of a flex tight end. So Tyler Conklin, 6'3", 254. He's not going to give you much as a blocker. He wasn't used that way with Central Michigan. Maybe you can try it. 254 is a little bit low, but maybe you get him up to 260 and try it if you want to ring him as a blocker. But to me, that's a flex tight end at the NFL. It came out, tested very, very well. It doesn't get talked about enough because of the way Gesicki performed. I liked what I saw from Conklin.
Yeah, and two guys that I wanted to highlight, Durham Smythe from Notre Dame, didn't have the best testing. Jumped 36 inches, though. Had a good short shuttle, if I'm not mistaken, at 4.23, which is good for the tight ends. There is among the top guys there. 4.81 on the 40. He wasn't going to be a burner anyway. He comes in at 253 pounds, and he's one of the better blocking guys in this class.
What would you say is the best part of your pass catching ability since Notre Dame did kind of feature you more as a blocker in the offense? What do you think the best thing that it is that you do as a pass catcher?
Yeah, so I think above all else, it's more of being smart. I think that's a big part of route running in general that people kind of forget about and neglect sometimes. So I think, you know, breaking down leverages of defenders, initial stem off the line of scrimmage, things of that nature kind of make up for a lot of other things that, you know, people focus on a lot more down the road in the route. So I think that's something that I really do pretty well, something that I'll try to continue to improve on, obviously. But I think that's my strength right now.
Dalton Schultz was a guy, apparently, that Zach Ertz was talking up to the Eagles coaching staff, the guy from Stanford. And he came in a little bit light at 244. However, I've been told that they want to add about 5 pounds to his frame. I went to his tape after I found out that they were talking with him. And I had some concerns, like good technique, not enough sand in the trunk to be able to hold up against defensive ends and some linebackers. I liked his movement skills. I thought he had some juice there. So those are some later guys that we decided to go there. Okay, so let's get to offensive tackle real quick before we move to the defensive side of the ball, because, oh man, there's so much to talk about. Colton Miller had a big day. What did you think about him? Because he tested really, really well. Like, athletically, I didn't know he had that in him. And not only that, he weighed in at over 300 pounds, right? He was like, what, 309, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, so Colton Miller's a guy, 309. He came in, 34-inch arms, obviously huge, 10 3/4 hands. You know, hand size, almost as important for arm length when you talk about tackles. Big mitts are tough to go through. You need grip strength. And that's something you see from Miller on his tape. But yeah, obviously, you know, 4.9, 5.40. Okay, that's very exciting. You know, don't really care about the 40-yard dash
right.
for a lot of these offensive tackles. That doesn't interest me very much. But the explosiveness numbers, the 10-1 on the broad, Mike, for a tackle, and broad jump, more than any other drill, in my opinion, maybe the 10-yard split, you could argue, measures hip explosiveness, and that's one of the main traits you need in an offensive lineman. Maybe a little bit less so in your offensive tackles, who spend a little bit more time in the back pedal in space, but still, you know, run blocking is all about hip explosiveness. So for him to put up a 10-1 speaks really, really well to that. And then obviously, breaking 30 with a 31.5 in the vertical, very exciting as well. Three cone of 734, so he's changing direction nicely. Colton Miller does not have round one tape, Mike. But if Philadelphia says to themselves, let's draft Miller at 32, keep Lane at right tackle. Jason Peters is still here at left tackle for a year. Let's work up Colton Miller as a left tackle. And then let's have the two most athletic tackles in the NFL in Lane Johnson and Colton Miller for 5 years starting in 2019. Yeah. I could sleep at night. You know what I mean? Miller is a guy, and important to note, Miller came in a skosh under 6'9". Which is nuts.
Too tall.
And sometimes, yeah, exactly. That's too tall. That height can end up hurting you. And so that's where my big concerns come. But I think if you give a guy a year, you're able to work with him, you can work on his base. And obviously, you know, Peters and Lane, I believe, are both around 6'5". And so it's not like they're shorter tackles, you know. And so I think Miller's is very much in play for 32 after the way that he performed. Connor Williams, Texas, had a great day. I know that people are still talking about him as an offensive guard. If he ends up there, sure. I mean, he's sub 300. He's got 33-inch arms, so I get it. If he ends up there, fine. But I'm definitely trying him out first at tackle.
For sure.
But he was, he's 505 in the 40, 34 in the vert, 9'4 in the broad. All that's fantastic. He looked exceptionally fluid moving out there. Easily the most fluid of all the movers. So Williams was an exciting guy. A shame we couldn't see much from Isaiah Wynn, torn labrum out of Georgia. He's another tackle, Mike tackle, that I really like. And then maybe he ends up as a guard at the next level. The one guy who really stood out, who I think Philadelphia should be interested in a big way, is Braden Smith out of Auburn, okay? And Braden Smith is a guy... played tackle for Auburn early in his career, moved into guard, I would argue in large part because Malzahn's power system pulls that left guard almost every other freaking
play. All the
time,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Braden Smith was their best lineman, so they just put him at left guard, and they said, this is the most important O-line spot, we're going to put our best guy here, and not even talk about the fact that Braden Smith was a good tackle to begin with, right? But he really impressed as far as a 35 bench press. That's an excellent number for him. 33.5 on the vert, 9.5 in the broad, 4.77 in the three cone. Those are all fantastic numbers for his position, and he's a guy who gives you offensive guard and offensive tackle versatility. So I think he's a great guy to bring in. If you believe Halupulivati Vaitai maybe is a starter, bring in Braden Smith. You can get him in the third round, okay, even with these numbers, because the tape isn't fantastic. I have a round three grade on the tape, but I know some people are lower on it, whatever. And then he can start at left guard when Wisniewski leaves. He can give you, you know, a potential backup there. Let Samuelu move permanently to center, and then he can even kick out the offensive tackle when you need him. It's a versatile piece. Braden Smith, great testing, a lot of versatility, fun pick.
He stood out to tape on me when I was watching their running back at Auburn, Kerryon Johnson. The timing he had on double teams and everything like that would fit very well here. The other big story out of the offensive line group, there are a couple. Billy Price, the center slash, you might be able to move him to guard real easily in his own system from Ohio State, tears his pec on rep 3 of his bench press, which is sad because he had first round value. And it turns out that it was a partial tear. He still could get surgery. I believe I've seen that it's been recommended to him to get surgery and not to rush it back because that's a kind of thing that could blow up on you. So that's interesting. That raises James Daniels' stock, the guy from Iowa, and he moved really, really well in the drills. Him and Willie Nandez throwing up 37
my boy,
bench
Willie.
Presses. he's a dancing bear, as they say.
Willie Nandez is going top 25. You can't tell me otherwise. Listen, if Willie Nandez drops to Jacksonville at 28, Jaguars are going to the Super Bowl 2018. Jaguars, I'm calling the shot right here. What episode is this going to be? Episode 8? All right, write it down so that we can talk about this when the Eagles are facing the Jaguars 2019 in February. Willie Nandez drops the Jaguars at 28. Firstly, the pick will be in 1 second flat. And secondly, Leonard Fournette's going to rush for 1,500. And thirdly, Blake Bortles is going to attempt like 4 passes a game max. And the Jaguars are going to the Super Bowl.
I wish that we needed a guard, and I wish that Willie Nandez was more like we ran more gap power type stuff, because I would love to have Willie Nandez on my team. And we're going to transition to the defense with that because we had a bet saying who would have the most bench presses. Willie Nandez threw up 37. Vita Vea, who was my pick, threw up 41.
Okay, however, well, your first pick was Leon Jacobs, who put up 26.
Yeah, I was screwing around.
Screwing around, then changed it to the 345-pound Samoan behemoth, who was everybody's pick.
Did I not say that it wasn't final and I was going to look at it? I just think Leon Jacobs is a crazy-looking human being, so that was the first thing that popped in my head. Anyway, Vita Vea beats out Willie Nandez on the bench press, like I said he would, puts up 41, but then Harrison Phillips from Stanford throws up 42 bench presses, and this is a guy that's not going to give you a whole lot in the way of pass rush. From what I understand, he trains MMA blindfolded, not decent run stuffer, but is a guy that could slide, you know, late day two, early day three, because he's not going to give you that pass rush upside. And then you have, as far as the edge guys, let's talk about a couple of them. You know what? I want to talk about Shaquem Griffin real quick before we get to guys like Harold Landry and Marcus Davenport, because Shaquem Griffin running 4.38, and we said he would run faster than Roquan Smith, and he ran
a lot faster. Oh yeah, no, Shaq's gonna run somewhere in the 4.4s, everything. I was like, oh, it's a great bold pick, Ben. It's gonna be awesome. Shaq Griffin ran a 4.38.
Insane.
Are you kidding me? What? That's not human.
4.38 for Shaquem Griffin. Hello. Shaquem Griffin is absolutely dominating.
Happy birthday, mama.
Okay, more impressive. Interesting, more impressive. Shaq Griffin, 4.38, 40 or 20 reps on the bench.
I like the 20 reps, and he's got that thing that clips on with whatnot, so he can do it. That didn't surprise me as much because bench and like lifting things like that are more about work ethic. And he has work ethic, like I've said, off the charts. So that doesn't surprise me too much, even without the hand, does more than Orlando Brown, does six more than Orlando Brown. The 4.38, I didn't see that coming whatsoever. That is freakishly fast.
See, I'm on the other side.
Oh,
I'm
really?
On the other side of it. Because, I'll put it to you this way. Take away a guy's hand, and I would imagine that he would train very, very hard to be very fast and very good mover on his feet.
Mm.
I understand that Griffin's got insane work ethic, but it takes something special to work hard enough on your upper body without a hand. Think of the upper body workouts you do that don't involve hands. There are none, okay? To work that hard to be able to put up 20. Like, that transcendent work ethic does not begin to describe that. That's ridiculous.
Oh, look, it's both bonkers. But you made me pick one. You know how many reps of 225 I'm putting up, Ben?
Mike, I've never benched a press in my life, okay? I don't even know how to do that.
I'm putting up zero. That's what I'm putting up. So yeah, good for Shaquem. Then you look at the edge guys. Obviously, Bradley Chubb from North Carolina State. He had a fantastic day. He solidified his stock as a top 10 pick for sure. Harold Landry, if he gets past the Packers at 14, the edge from Boston College, he had another good day as well. His production was lacking last year because of the ankle injury, had 16.5 sacks in his junior year. He did 4.64. He jumped 36 inches, 119 inches on the broad jump. And then the three cone, the 6.88. So he really did well. And one guy that I want to highlight with you, who I know you really like, Kylie Fitz out of
my
Utah.
Son.
He had a fantastic day from, and I honestly wasn't expecting it. His 6.88 three cone. And just so you know, three cone, again, to recap on this, three cone is very important for edge defenders because you're basically trying to gauge balance and speed through contact as you're coming around the edge is basically what that works out to. It's not, you know, always a one for one, but you need edge rushers that are gonna be able to do that. Or they have to win in other ways. Derek Barnett ran a 6.96 because he can run under a table. And Kylie Fitz comes out and does a 6.88 on the three cone. He looked excellent at 263 pounds, bro.
Yeah, no, that's a guy who propelled himself into late day two conversation. Tape is still questionable a little bit when you get into the Utah stuff. But Fitz is a guy who excited me at the Senior Bowl. He's putting it together. He's a guy who's learning how to get it together. You know, you talk about, oh, Marcus Davenport, he's raw and everything. Kylie Fitz, a little raw, putting it together. He's a guy who's going to give you great production by year three. To me, I mean, Landry was huge, obviously. To me, the biggest winner was Sam frickin' Hubbard.
Oh, yeah.
He ran a 6.84 three cone at 270. That is irregular, okay? 6.84. Arden Key, who everybody loves as far as his ability to bend the edge, came in at 238. So that's 32 pounds less than Hubbard.
And a 7.16. Yeah.
Right? That's the 0.32 second difference, which is a massive amount of time in a drill like this.
Yeah.
Sam Hubbard, 270, ran a 6.84. That's bonkers. All right. Hubbard looks like Joey Bosa grade B. And he tested like Joey Bosa grade B. And to me, he put himself in round one. Not all teams are going to love him. 270 is going to be heavy for some teams at the edge, but a team's going to take him in round one. You can't put up that three cone at that size and have great tape at Ohio State.
Yeah.
He's already a top 50 player and then not go round one, in my opinion. Sam Hubbard's the big winner among edges for me. As far as anybody else who looked good, the one guy who did catch my eye a little bit was Breland Speaks, who's like an edge defensive tackle hybrid kid out of Ole Miss. Yeah, 4.65 in his short shuttle. So he's got good short area movements, right? This guy was explosive in corners, in small spaces, and I was very excited by that. He's going to be a guy who gives you inside-outside versatility. And so if you run multiple style of fronts, I think a team like Green Bay, you know, using him like Mike Daniels should be interested in a guy like Breland Speaks.
Yeah, and I thought Aruna from Tulane.
He showed out.
Yeah, 38 and a half is what he jumped at, 262 pounds. He's 6'4 plus. I've seen a little bit of his tape, and he is definitely raw, but he has got some explosion, man. 10'8 on the broad. He's got some hops. He's going to get off on the ball really well. The three cone was bad. He's not much of a bender, but like I said, with that explosion, you can move him inside on pass rush sets and whatnot, and he's a guy that you can kind of develop. So look for him in like a day three type of area if you're looking to develop a pass rusher behind Derek Barnett. Linebackers, man. We already talked a little bit about Shaquem Griffin.
Shaq.
Yeah. Fred Warner, of course, looked really good in the drills. Kenny Young from UCLA looked good in the drills. Who else was out there that you saw? Joel Iwuniwe.
Iwuniwe.
Okay. What'd you think about his day? Because he's someone that we highlighted coming into this thing.
He didn't impress me the way I wanted him to.
Yeah.
Right? He was a guy who we wanted to come in the 4.5s, and he ran a 4.6. 9.9 in the broad isn't bad, but it's not great. And then, 7.06 in the three cone is, again, not bad. But I wanted him to come out better than he did. I do owe big ups to Leighton Van Der Esch.
Yeah.
We've talked on the pod about how we're not sold on his tape. And then it said, he's going to come out and be 6'4", and he's going to jump 38 and run in the 4.6s. And I was like, no way. Then he came out, he was 6'4", 255, ran in the 4.65, jumped 39.5, right? So this is a guy who's an exceptional athlete. Now, I still believe the questions about his ability to key are warranted. But I'm certainly going to be going back into the tape to suss those out. Because I'm not going to pass on a guy with this athletic profile unless I'm relatively certain that he's always going to be limited in the headspace. Which, you don't want to say that about a guy, but like that's where I kind of am with LVE. And obviously he's going to be in the conversation for Philadelphia at 32. And so that's something they have to pay attention to.
And that's something that I threw at you when you put it on the timeline that, I did not expect that at all. And neither did I as far as his athletic profile. And I asked you. To me, it comes down to play speed then, and that has to deal with mental processing and then being able to fire off with that athleticism, and that's what I think was lacking. Obviously, it's something you go back to the tape and confirm that that's what's missing from that, but I did not expect those movement skills. We thought he had one gear. That is obviously not the case. Is it mental? Is it something else? Mm-hmm. Is it just our eyes? What is lying to us? What is happening with that? So that's something you got to suss out. I was not impressed with Tigray Scales from Indiana. Did not have a good day for me. And that's disappointing because I really liked his tape. 4.77 on the 40.
Didn't he pull up during that 40 though?
Yeah, he did. But I didn't. Was he doing
something? Something was up with him that day because he ran two bad 40s and then didn't test at all.
Yeah,
for the rest of the day. We didn't hear beforehand that he wasn't going to test, and so something happened during the day. In my opinion.
Yeah, Sky Moore ran a little bit slower than I thought he would, but he looked really fluid in the field drill. Same with Darius Leonard. He was a little more hitchy. Yo, Josie Jewell, Iowa. He ran a 6.8.
That was big.
Three.
That was big. That was big. And I'm not like, Josie Jewell is not going to be a guy who I'm like, oh, you know what? Maybe he is a good athlete because Josie Jewell is a thumper. Okay. He is an in-space thumper. Right. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that to me. He's not a guy who impresses me with his on-field athleticism. And he wasn't transcendent enough. You know, he's still a guy who's running 4.82 in the 40s. He's still a guy who barely jumped 33 in the vert, 9.9 in the broad. Right. But that change direction was nice. That was good. That helps Josie a little bit, for sure.
What do you think about Jerome Baker from Ohio State? Because he ran 4.53, jumped 36.5, and had a broad at 10.6. How are you on Baker? Because he looked good.
Dang well should have, because his tape in 2016 was great. And we were all like, all you got to do in 2017 is be a little bit bigger and be a little bit better at taking on blocks. And instead, he was just as small and somehow worse at taking on blocks, Mike.
And so Baker hit 230, yeah.
Yeah, Baker's now your space guy. He's a space backer. He's an overhang defender. You cannot trust him in the box, which is very upsetting, in my opinion, because I liked him a lot. Two guys stood out, one of whom I knew coming in that I kind of liked what he did, and then I'm definitely more interested now in his tape. And the other guy who I have not seen at all yet before, beyond the Tremaine Edmonds, who, by the way, did amazing. Rashawn Evans did very well in the movement skills as well. You know, people, Roquan Smith, 4.5 flat is a great time for him. Yeah, Edmonds ran 4.54 at 20 pounds heavier. Okay, that's my LB1. Y'all can keep Roquan, whatever.
Ooh.
Peter, okay, he's good. I'm just saying, Edmonds is LB1.
And his ceiling is super high because he's 19. He's 19 doing this. It's insane.
All right, so Peter Kalambayi out of Stanford came in and did a great job. This is a guy who was originally more of an edge player for Stanford. He's now projecting to the NFL as an off-ball linebacker. Came in at 252, but he came under 4.6 in the 40, 4.57. And then we're talking about 34 in the vert, 10.1 in the broad as well. And he didn't have a great three cone, but this is a guy who showed out with a little bit of speed, a little bit of explosiveness, right? And the bad three cone makes sense because he could never bend when he was an edge at Stanford anyway. Right. And so this is a guy who might be a little bit rangier than we think and might be able to play a little bit of Sam linebacker in the NFL. So I'm excited about Kalambayi in that way. And then the other guy who came out and did good work and I think really showed out, Oren Burks, Vanderbilt. Okay, this is a guy who catapulted up the guys I need to watch, because you're going to come in at 233, which is a great size for NFL linebackers playing a little bit of will. Run 4.59, sub 4.6, but then here it comes. 39.5 in the vert, 10.11 in the broad, 6.82 in the three cone, 4.15 in the short shuttle. Okay. Jeez. Right. Like, you want to get my attention as far as an explosive change of direction athlete? Yeah. You go ahead and put up those numbers. Right. Those numbers are competitive with numbers like the ones that we saw put up by like a Leighton Vander Esch, numbers like the ones that we saw put up by a guy like Tremaine Edmonds. Right. And so, obviously, coming in at 233, you're a little bit lighter, but those are great will backer numbers. And so I got to go see what Oren Burks has for the Commodores there out of Vanderbilt. They had a good defense, and so I'm interested. Burks, if memory serves, was a late addition to the Senior Bowl roster. Never really paid much attention to him. And so Burks is a guy I've definitely got to get my eyes on, because that was a great combine for him. Good showing.
So we have defensive backs on Monday. We're recording a Sunday night. We've got some of the bench press numbers in, but honestly, if it's not terrible or if it's not through the roof, it's nothing really to talk about with those guys. Derwin James is going to be the highlight of the day. And then you have Josh Jackson, the cornerback from Iowa, who I think has the most question marks around him and can make himself the most money if he runs well and looks fluid. What do you think, Ben?
Oh, yeah. Derwin James is going to destroy everything. I think Mika Fitzpatrick is also going to have a good day that we don't pay attention to. Josh Jackson got himself off to a good start. I do care a little bit, not too much, but a little bit about bench numbers.
18.
And he put up 18. Which is a good number for Jackson. So that was impressive. I liked that a lot.
Mike Hughes put up 20.
Oh, please. As if I didn't know Mike Hughes was going to put up 20. I love that kid so much. Mike Hughes is just a fun freaking player. You can't be as good as he was in press coverage and not put up at least good numbers. I will say 20 is like, that's impressive, right? Yeah. For a guy who's 190, like the 20 is a great number. But I'm interested to see some of these. You know, we've seen Philadelphia talking with a lot of secondary players, and the thing that you notice is versatility. The thing that you notice is there are guys who can play that Malcolm Jenkins-y sort of role, you know, corner and safety, give Philadelphia a little bit of strength there in their nickelback situation. And so I am excited to see what guys like Rashawn Golden out of Tennessee can do. How about Dane Cruikshank, kid out of Arizona? I'm very excited about that. There was another safety. They spoke to Deshaun Elliott out of Texas, who's another guy who gives you that strong safety, sort of a box work. I'm excited to see what these guys are able to do. And so it's going to be a fun day. Defensive backs are always fun. And of course, Dante Jackson said today in his presser that I'm going to break the 40-yard dash time. So we have that to look forward to, as always. Wow.
Another nickel guy that I really like that I just watched tape on recently, along with Rashawn Golden from Tennessee, who was very nice. I watched Dante Jackson from LSU, the burner. He's twitched up, man. He is fun. MJ Stewart from North Carolina. He put up 18 on the bench. He's 5'10". He's not really aggressive in coverage, but he's really, really sticky. There are questions about his long speed that showed up on tape, so he can help himself if he can run really well. Even if he doesn't, I'm still very confident that he's a day two guy that you can put in as a starter right away in the nickel. So it'll be very interesting to see how these guys test tomorrow. It's going to be all DBs on Monday. Ben, man. We covered a lot of ground on this.
Good pod.
What else do we have for the gentle listeners?
What's up, gentle listeners? This has been the Kist and Solak Show, episode 8. We do appreciate you working with us on our fluid combine schedule. We're hoping that we gave you not only some good analysis on those top guys, but also talking about a fewer smaller names who impressed us that maybe you don't hear from the big media. Of course, we didn't give much lip service to guys with whom Philadelphia has spoken, simply because everybody kind of talks to everybody at the combine. That being said, as the days end at the combine and the media starts to return to their home cities is when we'll start to hear a lot more. And if you want any evidence of that, well, the Vinny Curry extension / restructure / trade / cut talks is a good example. We've heard more about the coaches Philadelphia's hiring. News is starting to break, right? And so hopefully we'll be able to give you a lot more context as to guys in whom Philadelphia is interested over the next couple of days, as well as breaking down the guys who impressed us and the guys who maybe left something to be desired with the defensive backs class as well. Beyond that, the only thing we're looking at left really in the draft cycle are the pro days, and we'll be keeping up with who still needs athletic testing numbers, who's going to put up what, and giving you guys posted on all the stuff we're hearing regards to that. Remember, the league year does start in about 10 days. That's 3/14. Philadelphia is already starting to make moves to come in underneath the 2018 salary cap when that begins, as we can see with the Vinny Curry. So we'll be updating you on all of that salary cap nonsense as well. Besides that, thank you so much for listening. Please always rate, review, and subscribe. We do appreciate you dropping by.
We all we got, we all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.